The Nature of Persona Reality. Part 1. Where You and the World Meet. Chapter 1. The Living Picture of the World. The first chapter is entitled, The Living Picture of the World. The living picture of the world grows within the mind. The world as it appears to you is like a three-dimensional painting in which each individual takes a hand. Each color, each line that appears within it has first been painted within a mind, and only then does it materialize without. In this case, however, the artists themselves are a portion of the painting, and appear within it. There is no effect in the exterior world that does not spring from an inner source. There is no motion that does not first occur within the mind. The great creativity of consciousness is your heritage. It does not belong to mankind alone, however, each living being possesses it, and the living world consists of a spontaneous cooperation that exists between the smallest and the highest, the greatest and the lowly, between the atoms and the molecules and the conscious, reasoning mind. All manner of insects, birds and beasts cooperate in this venture, producing the natural environment. This is as normal and inevitable as the fact that your breath causes a mist to form on glass if you breathe upon it. All consciousness creates the world, rising out of feeling tone. It is a natural product of what your consciousness is. Feelings and emotions emerge into reality in certain specific ways. Thoughts appear, growing on the bed already laid. The seasons spring up, formed by ancient feeling tones, having deep and abiding rhythms. They are the result, again, of innate creative aspects that are a portion of all life. These ancient aspects lie, now, deeply buried in the psyches of all species, and from them the individual patterns, the specific blueprints for new differentiations, emerge. The body of the earth can be said to have its own soul, or mind, whichever term you prefer. Using this analogy, the mountains and oceans, the valleys and rivers and all natural phenomena spring from the earth's soul, as all events and all manufactured objects appear from the inner mind or soul of mankind. The inner world of each man and woman is connected with the inner world of the earth. The spirit becomes flesh. Part of each individual's soul, then, is intimately connected with what we will call the world's soul, or the soul of the earth. The smallest blade of grass, or flower, is aware of this connection, and without reasoning comprehends its position, its uniqueness and its source of vitality. The atoms and molecules that compose all objects, whether it be the body of a person, a table, a stone or a frog, know the great passive thrust of creativity that lies beneath their own existence, and upon which their individuality floats, distinct, clear and unassailable. So does the human individual rise up in victorious distinctiveness from the ancient and yet ever new fountains of its own soul. The self rises from unknowing into knowing, constantly surprising itself. As you read these sentences, for example, some of your knowledge is conscious knowing and is instantly available. Some is unconscious, but even the unconscious knowledge is knowing in its own unknowing. You always know what you are doing, even when you do not realize it. Your eye knows it sees, though it cannot see itself except through the use of reflection. In the same way the world as you see it is a reflection of what you are, a reflection not in glass but in three-dimensional reality. You project your thoughts, feelings, and expectations outward, then you perceive them as the outside reality. When it seems to you that others are observing you, you are observing yourself from the standpoint of your own projections. You are the living picture of yourself. You project what you think you are outward into flesh. Your feelings, your conscious and unconscious thoughts, all alter and form your physical image. This is fairly easy for you to understand. It is not as easy, however, to realize that your feelings and thoughts form your exterior experience in the same way, or that the events that appear to happen to you are initiated by you within your mental or psychic inner environment. Your body does not just happen to be thin or fat, tall or short, healthy or ill. These characteristics are mental, and are thrust outward by you upon your image. I do not mean to be facetious, but you were not born yesterday. Your soul was not born yesterday, in those terms, but before the annals of time as you think of time. The characteristics that were yours at birth were yours for a reason. The inner self chose them. To a large extent, the inner self can even now alter many of them. You did not arrive at birth without a history. Your individuality was always latent within your soul, and the history that is a part of you is written within unconscious memory that resides not only within your psyche, but is faithfully decoded in your genes and chromosomes, asterisk and fulfilled in the blood that rushes through your veins. You are aware, alert, and participating in many more realities than you know as your soul expresses itself through you. The consciousness of your usual daylight hours, the ego consciousness, rises up like a flower from the ground of the underneath, the unconscious bed of your own reality. Though you are not aware of it, this ego itself emerges, then falls back again into the unconscious, from which another ego then rises as a new bloom from the springtime earth. You do not have the same ego now that you had 5 years ago, but you are not aware of the change. Ego rises out of what you are, in other words. It is a part of the action of your being in consciousness, but as the eye cannot see its own shifting colors and expressions, as it is not aware that it lives and dies constantly as its atomic structure changes, so you are not aware that the ego continually changes, dies, and is reborn. Physically, the structure of a cell retains its identity, even while the matter that composes it is continually altered. The cell rebuilds itself in line with its own pattern of identity, yet is always a part of emerging action, alive and responding even in the midst of its own multitudinous deaths. So psychological structures form to which various names are given. The names are meaningless, but the structures behind them are not. Such psychological structures also retain their identity, their pattern of uniqueness, even while they change constantly, die and are reborn. The I rises out of the physical structure. The ego rises out of the structure of the psyche. It cannot see itself, as the I cannot. Both look outward, in one case away from the physical body, and in the other case away from the inner psyche to the environment. The creative body consciousness creates the I. The creative inner psyche creates the ego. The body forms the I in the splendid wisdom of its great unconscious knowing. The psyche brings forth the ego that perceives psychologically as the I perceives physically. Both the I and the ego are formations focused toward perception of exterior reality. Rupert was correct in the insight of a few moments earlier, during break. In my book, we will be going deeper into the nature of the unconscious and the psyche, bringing out some concepts that are of greatest value. Rupert himself, unconsciously but also to some extent consciously, has been more intrigued with questions concerning consciousness and personality, the role of the ego consciousness, for example, since beginning his novel, Oversoul 7. Much is not as yet known. Your psychologists are not able to think in terms of a soul, and your religious leaders are not able, or refuse, to comprehend it psychologically even to its simplest degree. Metaphysics and psychology have not met, in other words. I am, as I have told you often myself, independent of Rupert. As you know, there are connections between us. Asterisk, he does not understand as yet the true nature of his own creativity. Few people do. There are always psychological reasons for all such phenomena, for any phenomena at all. In some respects, of course, Rupert's children are his books. His psyche is enormously creative. Part of what I seem to be as I speak through him is as deeply and unconsciously a phenomenon as the birth of a child would be. In a different way, so is Oversoul 7 as he thinks of it. These are not physical children at the mercy of time and the elements, but eternal ones, more knowledgeable than the parent. God springing from the human psyche, half human, half divine. And on this level, the parent is astonished, delighted at the superior accomplishments of its children, the superiority of the offspring, and yet also jealous to some extent. If the books are children symbolically, then in those same terms, his representation of my reality is a far more living, three-dimensional aspect. He has at various times wondered about schizophrenia, for example. He does not realize that on this level, now, and regardless of my independence and other issues involved, that he creates the personalities free of time, organizes them under the leadership of the conscious mind, and assigns them tasks of great validity and importance, which are then carried out. This is creativity of a most specialized nature and allows him to probe, if he will, into the nature of consciousness, the psyche, and creativity in a way that few can. Now he himself set up the conditions that would make such results possible. A certain part of my reality is a portion of a certain part of his reality, and here the creation of what I seem to be takes place. Beyond that is my own independent reality. I will have more to say, and add to these notes so that they will build up by themselves. If Rupert would regard his problems as challenges, then he would get much better results. Your experience in the world of physical matter flows outward from the center of your inner psyche. Then you perceive this experience. Exterior events, circumstances and conditions are meant as a kind of living feedback. Altering the state of the psyche automatically alters the physical circumstances. There is no other valid way of changing physical events. It might help if you imagine an inner living dimension within yourself in which you create, in miniature psychic form, all the exterior conditions that you know. Simply put, you do exactly this. Your thoughts, feelings and mental pictures can be called incipient exterior events, for in one way or another each of these is materialized into physical reality. You change even the most permanent seeming conditions of your life constantly through the varying attitudes you have toward them. There is nothing in your exterior experience that did not originate within you. Interactions with others do occur, of course, yet there are none that you do not accept or draw to you by your thoughts, attitudes, or emotions. This applies in each area of life. In your terms, it applies both before life and after it. In the most miraculous fashion are you given the gift of creating your experience. In this existence you are learning to handle the inexhaustible energy that is available to you. The mass condition of the world, and the situation of each individual in it, is the materialization of man's progress as he forms his world. The joy of creativity flows through you as effortlessly as your breath. From it the most minute areas of your outer experience bring. Your feelings have electromagnetic realities that rise outward, affecting the atmosphere itself. They group through attraction, building up areas of events and circumstances that finally coalesce, so to speak, either in matter as objects, or as events in time. Some feelings and thoughts are translated into structures that you call objects. These exist, in your terms, in a medium you call space. Others are translated instead into psychological structures called events, that seem to exist in a medium you call time. Space and time are both root assumptions, which simply means that man accepts both, and assumes that his reality is rooted in a series of moments and the dimension of space. So your inner experience is translated in those terms. Even the duration of an event or object in space or time is determined by the intensity of the thoughts or emotions that gave it birth. Duration in space is not the same as duration in time, however, though it may seem that this is the case. I am speaking in your terms now. An event or object that exists briefly in space may have a much greater duration than time. It may have far greater importance and intensity, existing in your memory, for example, long after it has disappeared in space. Such an event or object does not merely exist symbolically within your mind or memory, but in your terms its actual reality continues as a time event. Nor is its reality in space annihilated as long as it exists within your mind. Let us take a very simple example. A child has been told not to play with a doll. The order is disobeyed. The child, wittingly or unwillingly, breaks the doll, and it is finally thrown away. The doll exists in time quite vitally as long as the child or the adult-to-be remembers it. If the doll sat on a bureau and this is also vividly recalled, then the space in which the doll sat still carries the impression of the doll, though other objects may be placed there. You react, therefore, not only to what is visible to your physical eyes in space, or to what is directly in front of you in time, but also to objects and events whose reality is still with you, though they may seem to have disappeared. Basically, you create your experience through your beliefs about yourself and the nature of reality. Another way to understand this is to realize that you create your experiences through your expectations. Your feeling tones are your emotional attitudes toward yourself and life in general, and these generally govern the large areas of experience. They give the overall emotional coloration that characterizes what happens to you. Period. You are what happens to you. Your emotional feelings are often transitory, but beneath there are certain qualities of feeling uniquely your own, that are like deep musical chords. While your day-to-day feelings may rise or fall, these characteristic feeling tones lie beneath. Sometimes they rise to the surface, but in great long rhythms. You cannot call these negative or positive. They are instead tones of your being. They represent the most inner portion of your experience. This does not mean that they are hidden from you, or are meant to be. It simply means that they represent the core from which you form your experience. If you have become afraid of emotion or the expression of feeling, or if you have been taught that the inner self is no more than a repository of uncivilized impulses, then you may have the habit of denying this deep rhythm. You may try to operate as if it did not exist, or even try to refute it. But it represents your deepest, most creative impulses. To fight against it is like trying to swim upstream against a strong current. These feeling tones, then, pervade your being. They are the form your spirit takes when combined with flesh. From them, from their core, your flesh arises. Everything that you experience has consciousness, and each consciousness is endowed with its own feeling tone. There is great cooperation involved in the formation of the Earth as you think of it, and so the individual living structures of the planet rise up from the feeling tone within each atom and molecule. Your flesh springs about you in response to these inner chords of your being, and the trees, rocks, seas and mountains spring up as the body of the Earth from the deep inner chords within the atoms and molecules, which are also living. Because of the creative cooperation that exists, the miracle of physical materialization is performed so smoothly and automatically that consciously you are not aware of your part in it. The feeling tone then is the motion and fiber, the timbre, the portion of your energy devoted to your physical experience. Now it flows into what you are as a physical being and materializes you in the world of seasons, space, flesh, and time. Its source, however, is quite independent of the world that you know. Once you learn to get the feeling of your own inner tone, then you are aware of its power, strength and durability, and you can to some extent ride with it into deeper realities of experience. The incredible emotional richness and variety and splendor of physical experience is the material reflection of this inner feeling tone. It pervades the events in your life, the overall inner direction, the quality of perception. It fills up and illuminates the individual aspects of your life, and largely determines the persuasive subjective climate in which you dwell. It is the essence of yourself. Its sweeps are broad in range, however, it does not determine, for example, specific events. Pause. It paints the colors in the large landscape of your experience. It is the feeling of yourself, inexhaustible. In other terms, it represents the expression of yourself in pure energy, from which your individuality rises, the you of you, unmistakably given identity that is never duplicated. This energy comes from the core of being, in capital letters, from all that is, with our usual capitals, and represents the source of never-ending vitality. It is being, being in you. As such, all of the energy and power of being is focused and reflected through you in the direction of your three-dimensional existence. While your feeling tone is uniquely yours, still it is expressed in a certain fashion that is shared by all consciousnesses focused in physical reality. So in those terms you spring from the earth as all the other creatures and natural living structures. You are, while physical, a portion of nature, therefore, not apart from it. Trees and rocks possess their own consciousness, and also share a gestalt consciousness, even as the living portions of your body. The cells and organs have their own awarenesses, and a gestalt one. So the race of man also has individual consciousness and a gestalt or mass consciousness, of which you individually are hardly aware. The mass race consciousness, in its terms, possesses an identity. You are a portion of that identity while still being unique, individual and independent. You are confined only to the extent that you have chosen physical reality, and so placed yourself within its context of experience. While physical, you follow physical laws, or assumptions. These form the framework for corporeal expression. Within this framework you have full freedom to create your experience, your personal life in all of its aspects, the living picture of the world. Your personal life, and to some extent your individual living experience, help create the world as it is known in your time. In this book we will be speaking about your own subjective world, and your part in the creation of events, both private and shared. It is important before we continue that you realize that consciousness is within all physical phenomena, however, it is vital that you realize your position within nature. Nature is created from within. The personal life that you know rises up from within you, yet it is given. Period. Since you are a part of being, then in a certain fashion you give yourself the life that is being lived through you. You make your own reality. There is no other rule. Knowing this is the secret of creativity. I have spoken of you, yet this must not be confused with the you that you often think you are, the ego alone, for the ego is only a portion of you. It is that expert part of your personality that deals directly with the contents of your conscious mind, and is concerned most directly with the material portions of your experience. The ego is a very specialized portion of your greater identity. It is a portion of you that arises to deal directly with the life that the larger you is living. The ego can feel cut off, lonely and frightened, however, if the conscious mind lets the ego run away with it. The ego and the conscious mind are not the same thing. The ego is composed of various portions of the personality. It is a combination of characteristics, ever-changing, that act in unitary fashion. The portion of the personality that deals most directly with the world. The conscious mind is an excellent perceiving attribute, a function that belongs to inner awareness but in this case is turned outward toward the world of events. Through the conscious mind, the soul looks outward. Left alone, it perceives clearly. In certain terms, the ego is the eye through which the conscious mind perceives, or the focus through which it views physical reality. But the conscious mind automatically changes its focus throughout life. The ego, while appearing the same to itself, ever changes. It is only when the conscious mind becomes rigid in its direction, or allows the ego to take on some of its own functions, that difficulties arise. Then the ego allows the conscious mind to work in certain directions and blocks its awareness in others. And so it is from your larger identity that you form the reality that you know. It is up to you to do this with joy and vigor, clearing your conscious mind so that the deeper knowledge of your greater identity can form joyous expressions in the world of the flesh.